Welcome to Ojibwe Stories, Gaganunanida, a program of Ojibwe stories and culture. I'm your host, Eric Reddix. I'm from the Lacouture Ojibwe Reservation in northwest Wisconsin, and I'm currently an assistant professor of American Indian Studies at the University of Minnesota Duluth. Our guest today is Gordon Jourdain, who grew up in the Ojibwe community of Lac La Croix in Ontario.
Something I've been meaning to ask about, and I find students ask about that too, is how do you approach things like modern technology when you're speaking Ojibwe? I mean, or different things like our cell phones.
Yeah. And well, I imagine in an evolution of humankind, we've all had to acclimatize or change, not only biologically, but the technology that we came up with has somewhat change the way we do things. And that's apparent with Ojibwe people as well, all of humanity. And luckily, Ojibwe is a very descriptive language. And if you have the language to describe something or even kind of recognize how it propels itself or what kind of utility it has, you're able to describe all those things without any having to think about it a lot. Mm-hmm. Of course, the problem that comes with that is many people have different ideas about how to describe that thing or whatever that object is and how it's used. It'll be just like anything else when we look at something. If there was 10 of us here, we'd have 10 different perspectives on things.
Right.
At first, when I first started, when I came down this way, I was really, a traditional thinking Ojibwe person. And there was only one way, and that is the way that I learned it at home. Since then, I think I've transformed into a very respectful Ojibwe thinking person and accepted a lot of the changes that have occurred outside of protected places like where I grew up at.
What do you think that line is? I mean, is it tough to draw that line between, okay, this is a different community, a different family, et cetera, and this is incorrect? We know what's incorrect. We know what's Ojibberish, as it's become to be known as, especially with modern technologies. There's just a lot of different ways to say things. But is there kind of a fuzzy in-between where, especially, you know, someone like yourself coming down to southern Ojibwe country, where you're like, ooh, should I say something? Should I not say something?
My mother's from northern Minnesota, so I have a lot of the dialect that is spoken around the borderland, Ojibwe they call it. And a lot of my relatives are northern Minnesota, Ojibwe dialect. They moved over that way before they had borders, so I speak that language. And because I'm really, really knowledgeable and was exposed to language, I'm a first language speaker, of course. I can talk to all of the elders in all of the communities in northern Minnesota and with northern Wisconsin, wherever they have Ojibwe-speaking elders still, and I'll understand them really, really well. The parts that I wouldn't have any reference to would be the geographical places around the communities where that particular dialect is spoken. So a majority of the Ojibwe language, I will understand and they will understand me too. Mm-hmm. I may have a little bit of a different accent to things, and that's usually fun when we talk to people. So when I first came down here, because I grew up in a close community where the language that I understood was spoken there extremely fluently with everybody. I had, of course, a biased opinion as protective societies would. And, of course, I also wanted to make an impression on people to say, hey, this guy really knows how to speak Ojibwe. So I was quick to respond to things until I was scolded by a very respected elder of mine because some of the words that I spoke, apparently, without my knowledge, they were placed in a book and my name was on it. And he said, what does this mean? And I explained it to him and he said, just be careful. So I'm kind of like extremely respectful with questions. It'll take me a long time to come up with the correct or at least an answer that I'm comfortable with giving to somebody. One friend of mine, Migizi, he asked me the name of Virginia, Minnesota. It took me 4 years to find out what that word is. And then I finally told him, I think this past spring. And I think he already had forgotten about his question by then. But go and talk to my uncles in Onaminozagaiganing, who would know how to say those words.
Mm.
Because that's their area there. That would be their geographical reference.
And do you think it's important that we... I mean, how important is certain things like technology, or are they, to come up with an Ojibwe term? And especially, you know, in the classroom, I'd imagine there's these concepts like mathematical concepts that are very difficult to kind of think about. But here's the example I'll use to kind of get at this question is the whole gape versus mushkode mushkikiwabu. You know, it's like... At what point should we try to describe something in Ojibwe, and what point is it just okay to anglicize something? Or, well, the opposite of anglicize. Take an English word and Ojibweize it, I guess.
Yeah. A lot of the place names that are on the billboards all over Ojibwe country are anglicized Ojibwe words, like Bemidjigamag. And, of course, they mispronounce it and say Bemidji. Maybe they didn't have a double vowel orthography experience then when they were writing that out, but it's Kapimichigamag Zagaigan, that lake which is perpendicular to the direction of all the other lakes, Bimichigama.
Huh.
That's what that would be. It's a description of the geographical lay of the land there. My grandmother, who was 114 years old, she used a lot of those words like gapi, mbadad for butter. Even though she could have said Ozawimede, I don't know what her idea was with that, what made her tilt to one side or the other. I like being able to come up with terminology. Of course, I have a lot of mathematical training. I'm a carpenter. I went to trade school. I went to engineering school when I was young. So I have a lot of understanding about mathematics. And it's something that I find really, really exciting to do, is coming up with mathematical words to use in Ojibwe, even though those kinds of words are not part of traditional Ojibwe vernacular. We have to use those because now we probably, I want to say, the only place where Ojibwe learning is occurring right now is in the classroom. And the classroom language is very, very different from what the language of the elders is. Was and is going to be in the future. So we have to come up with a ruler and pen and a smart board, whiteboard and all those kinds of things. When the children go and talk with the elders, and I talk with the elders too, they kind of have a funny blank stare when I talk to them about Gikendasunabakisag, which is a literal translation of smart board. They have no reference for that, so...
To me, it's almost something where if we want Ojibwe to be more than just, say, a ceremonial language, but something that's a functioning part of everyday life for Anishinaabe people, we almost have to approach it that way.
I think what you said about the functionality is important, because we have to use it. It has to be in context for the children who are young and the ones who are... I read an article that a professor that I had at the University of Minnesota sent me from the New York Times, and was talking about that a six-year-old child has the complete power to have a language exist or cease to exist. And the article went on to say that the way that we need to do that is to use technology and tap into the excitement that children have when they sit in front of a computer or have a little iPad or something like that, and have it speaking in the language that you want them to favor to exist in the future. I really, really believe that. So based on what we're talking about and what you just said with your question, is I think that's what we have to do, is use it in context with the modern world that we live in these days.
So what point in your life did you think, well, I want to do this instead of carpentry?
I think I was always a natural teacher. And I think we all are. In some respect, we all have the capacity to teach things to people, whether we are conscious of it or not. We're role models to somebody. I guess I never had the satisfaction when I build things as I do when I talk to somebody in Ojibwe. And because I'm a first language speaker, I always thought that, hey, I should do something with the language. But I did. I spoke to people in Ojibwe when we were building houses. In fact, the first house that I ever built with a relative of mine, he spoke just Ojibwe. And we built that house talking in Ojibwe, measuring in Ojibwe, nailing things in Ojibwe, cutting things too short in Ojibwe. It was fun.
Huh.
So I have a lot of, because of my background in construction, I also have a lot of construction words too.
Is it harder for you to speak building a house than it is about, say, if you're telling a story about your grandma and like rabbit snaring? Or, well, I'll give you an example. I was talking to a mutual friend of ours from LCO, and he was getting a little frustrated with me because he was talking about his rice machine and how it operated. And it was so like complex, kind of technical, you know, and it's just different. You know, like, again, this is, you know, me coming from classroom vocabulary. It's just something. And again, I think, you know, as educators, because students want to know that, they want to know ceremonial language, they want to know like basic conversation. We don't get into this really kind of technical everyday life kind of stuff. And it kind of threw me for a loop. So. Mm. So is it hard? Does your brain have to work extra hard if you think about like construction terminology? Like if you're going to say, okay, I'm going to do this project at home, but if you're thinking in Ojibwe, is it tougher than if you're saying, well, I'm going to go out in the woods and snare a rabbit? I'm serious, you know, because
I'm always thinking in Ojibwe all the time.
Mm-hmm.
My thoughts are translated before they come out of my mouth into English. And I enjoy building anything in Ojibwe.
Mm-hmm.
I just thoroughly enjoy how Ojibwe really, really gets at the feeling of what you're doing. Rather than describing a procedure or a method of doing something, you're involved in the motion and the emotion and the thought patterns of doing this activity when you're doing it in Ojibwe.
And so it's a completely different kind of thing.
Yes.
Even these more modern things.
Yeah, and you can't put them together. See, you have to be able to not understand, but recognize that you're talking about two different silos.
Mm-hmm.
There's this Ojibwe thinking while you're building something, and then there's this other language where you use these words to do this. Sometimes it's very difficult to put them together. It's just almost comforting to leave well enough alone and leave them in their own silos and enjoy each one separately or together if you can do that. It was interesting the way that I acquired a language, though. Now that I'm a language teacher, I'm not an educated language teacher. I grew up learning to speak Ojibwe naturally. The way that I understand it now is I listened for a long time. I was in the Tikinagan, and my mother would carry me and just kind of put me somewhere. And I'd listen to everything from there. I'd listen to the birds, the winds, and all kinds of animals and things falling over, leaves rustling in the wind. A lot of the Ojibwe language is derived from those sounds that you hear when you're out in the forest.
Mm-hmm.
And for some people, that's very difficult for them to recreate those sounds.
Mm-hmm.
Either they don't have the muscle movement with their their mouths and all that kind of stuff to be able to do that, to produce that sound. And I can see where it gets really, really frustrating right away. But I always tell my students, go for a walk in the woods and just sit there or listen to the things that you hear out there. That's where the Ojibwe language is. It's a natural language that we acquired from the environments that we were listening to.
Mm-hmm.
From the birds, from the animals, you know, from the almost said fish, they don't make any noise. Do they? It's different. And then after listening for a while, I'd start to speak a little bit. And it was barely recognizable, probably, my first few words as a child. And that's the case also when you're learning any kind of language as an adult. You need to listen for a while. And when you do produce it, it's kind of embarrassing or short of what your expectations of yourself are. And then after that, after you go through that process, then it wasn't until later on in my life that I taught myself how to read and write Ojibwe, because I had the desire to come and do that. I taught myself, I picked up a book, and I taught myself to read and write almost overnight. But when we teach Ojibwe in a classroom, and I'm talking about more college and university level, you're expected to read and write it first before you speak and listen to it, or you listen and speak to it. There's kind of like opposite.
It's like a formula.
Yeah.
Like it's almost like a math class to a certain extent.
It's a different way of teaching the language.
Mm-hmm.
So I've learned to recognize that.
This is Ojibwe Stories, Gaganunida, a program of Ojibwe culture, which is brought to you in part by the College of Education and Human Service Professions at the University of Minnesota Duluth, home of the Nwayung Ojibwe Language Nest. Nwayung is an Ojibwe language immersion preschool program serving children beginning at 33 months up through the first day of kindergarten. All subjects are taught in Ojibwe Mo'en, and children are immersed in Ojibwe culture, language, and history. Nwayung operates Monday through Thursday, September through May. Full and part-time enrollment options are available. More information at 218-726-7547. Our guest today is Gordon Jourdain, who grew up in the Ojibwe community of Lac La Croix in Ontario. How do you approach the why questions? Like, not first speakers always want to know, like, why is that? For example, like, why are strawberries inanimate and raspberries animate? Is there a certain mechanism you have for, like, approaching those kind of issues? Or because it's language, you know? I mean, there are reasons for certain things in Ojibwe, from what I've understand. But on the other hand, it is a language, and it's not like a formula, a perfect formula or anything like that.
I wish I could answer that question. I say that because most of the time I'm in Ojibwe immersion, and the questions that are asked, I love answering questions, and it takes me a long, long time to get at what the essence of a word is, because I'm more of a global thinker, and I think in Ojibwe I have to develop all these different connections to get at that single part of the whole entire system first. I'm saying that because I will explain very thoroughly any kind of question that I have that I'm given in Ojibwe, but is that person going to be able to understand what I'm sharing with them? It's very, very difficult in an Ojibwe immersion setting. I've never had the opportunity to teach Ojibwe when I'm speaking English. I've never had that opportunity to do that.
So in the immersion setting, then, in a case like that, people just learn it as it is, and that's that.
Depends on the level of the people. I can kind of gauge the glares that I get or the nods and the, I guess, the anxiety of the different body movements of the students that I have. But I do try to provide an extremely thorough explanation for a lot of the Ojibwe words. Whether my explanations are understood, I have no idea.
But it's in Ojibwe, you're saying?
Yeah, it's in Ojibwe. It's all it's all in Ojibwe. I never took an Ojibwe class. Yeah. And I don't think I ever taught an Ojibwe class either in English. It's always been immersion. And that's where my passion is. Yeah.
So do you think for older learners, because I won't even say adult, because I think the same rules kind of apply to even, say, teenage language learners, you know, people that take it in high school and don't have the immersion background, but do you think when immersion's kind of started off that will kind of solve everything? Or do you think there's also a need for somebody that isn't immersed as a kid, there's still that need for explanation, for why is this, you know, for all those things that kind of, for better or worse, these college classes and even probably high school classes are about?
At the beginning of my Ojibwe immersion journey, I was like, my ignorance at the time at the different levels of Ojibwe teachings all over northern Minnesota and northern Wisconsin. I really didn't have any idea what was going on before, but I've been doing it now for 11 years, and I'm really, really excited because of all those different levels, different opportunities or different spaces where people who have experiences in a lot of different Ojibwe language capacity And as I see those, and they're starting to come into fruition right now, where we're starting to have Ojibwe immersion kindergarten in a mainstream public school. And a lot of people are involved. And it's exciting to know that there are people in high school, in college, at the university, at home, in different communities, and now in a mainstream public school who are interested in at least achieving the same objectives. At the onset of my immersion journey, I didn't have any idea what was going on. After being exposed to it almost on a daily basis, I'm forever being texted by people who want for me to explain a word or how to say things. And all the work that everybody is doing is, I think, is having really positive effects on a lot of people. And there's no way that as a first language speaker, I would diminish any of those places where that is occurring. And I shouldn't. I shouldn't be naive enough to say that. My father was really industrious. In the fall, of course, the days get shorter. During Manomini Kegis, my mother and I would get into this 19-foot Grumman. My dad used to have a 5.5 horsepower outboard motor on there. We'd go probably about, I want to say half an hour to get to the rice bed. And we'd get a little bit. Before we had to come back. Otherwise it would be dark. So every day we'd get a little bit. Pretty soon we had half a sack like this. And then my dad was kind of like an inventor, like your friend there that you were talking about. He had a thrasher. He also had what do they call that when they roast the rice?
Parching?
Yeah, he had a parching machine. He had a parching machine. He had a thrasher. And for a long, long time, he thought about, well, how can I ushkachinagane without using physical energy? By that time, we had, maybe quarter of a bag of ready-to-nushkachinagane rice. And then he had a little Briggs & Stratton engine there that was hooked up to a blower with a pipe like this.
And just puff it out to the
lake. And, that's what he thought. He'd just puff the mazan out and the rice would hit the screen. He had a protective screen there. And then the rice would fall into this bucket there. He had it all set up, started the engine. My mom and my brothers are there. So he turned it off. That thing was blowing right into the lake. So he poured that rice in there, whoosh, right out into the lake. I think my mom almost finished him off then. I think that was it. He never tried to perfect his machine. But that's the kind of person he was. He was always, I guess, tinkering with things when you're out in the middle of nowhere is a good habit to get into, I suppose.
Yep.
And he was a tinkerer, so. Maybe Jagia Gabinamuchi and Gikinoma go Kanabacha and Guchigopi. Magjagi shinio be one agisian. Giamin a copy in Manomen, Kanga be asked no Manomen at the Kichuanang. Gia, Gimusko Uchiga take and a watch nippe, Gimusko Uchiga teone. Manomen is agaganan, Kanga be asked no. Mange at the she, de tape and cogayane, be up Kuchimanish. Minoa e, Machish Kachigan, none sharp the pitchy bitane, pitchy magat ne. Machis Kachiganish. Mitchkega Majibisanga do tuiban. Kishkokino mago and Konimajibism and Gimeno Manomini Kegis is a pea. Majibisanga tenimena a obashing, oversobashing is nicate. Nikensi being is nicate, the kitchenang. Mitigi ayage, Manomen, be bangigo bangigo ya a gangne ge nibiwa chibo chibo ne bangishimo ko nge na baginda ya men kama no men kame magsa meta sa de babish kuchigan magsa shina de babish kuchigan bigiwa ya mun kuchi tashigo nijo nam egi je kega ungi sa men sugi je wa aptuski ne bi miskimo no men mida shende te bona kinta Oginta ojiston gego ki inazo kutte. Ojiston ega poushki gesene gego ojiston. Poushki gesene. Mino yogi ojiston ga gapisi gema gatnik. Miche I kabe ego gina naga tenda motuk. Ogi attawen gego piop koni piwa. Machi shkatche ganishke yoge ayan. Pepkan gego. Mida shogi koko ayan na. We went hispanize che. Че не мушкачи нага не естик, кайжу життут ми ве и ке бутачи гесце енек. Оги атавена нетте утен анга гудна, кайжу жиситту упан. Оги капи зан маномен, оги не мушкачи тун маномен, кана гегу, ва, магжа нане медана, дебаби шкучи ган оги аян. Кенасан нду життавен уйку життут, мачи бизаттут, мачи шкачи ган, пум, Maji bitte. Ska bigi nangi maga buta chigese. Panay maga buta chigese. Hoa, nga umina bantana. Yur tapang e manomen. E si pinchi zigi nangi maga inje. Pan, puh. Panay ka minna ay bitte kite ing. Nibi ka nga pa maagunde. Manomen. Nga kishun shikita ma. Kega ugi pagaskindi ba yon na. Ndutuy wa na yon. Kite ang. Hey, Kenji isn't it? Kita. Mama, I'm going to go to the house. I'm going to go to the
That's all the time we have for today. I want to thank our guest, Gordon Jourdain, for sharing his stories with us. This is Ojibwe Stories, Gaga Nunanida. I'm your host, Eric Reddix. To listen again to past episodes of the program, visit the KUMD website at kumd.org. Ojibwe Stories, Gaga Nunanida is produced by KUMD and the Tribal Sovereignty Institute at the University of Minnesota Duluth, home of the Master of Tribal Administration and Governance, or MTAG program, where students learn about leadership, law, sovereignty, and management from a tribal perspective. MTAG was designed by tribes for tribes. More information at umdmtag.org. Funding for Ojibwe Stories Gaga Nunanida is provided in part by the UMD College of Education and Human Service Professions and by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.